If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Kinda Funny XCast, your home for all things Xbox here at Kinda Funny. Of course, I'm one of your hosts, Snowbike Mike, and today I am joined by both of my gaming dads in person, the Rogue One, Mr. Gary Whitta. Gary, how are you feeling? A little under the weather last week.
I was sick last week, which is why I had to call in on remote, if you recall. Yep. It was a cold that kind of laid at everyone in the whole house. The kids had it, everyone was out for the count. But today's actually the first day that I feel like fully, like 100% back in business. And I got to tell you, it's still such a thrill to get all the production values. It hadn't still fully sunk in yet. We did the show for like, a couple of years just on Discord, very unglamorous, you know, just sitting there in our bedrooms or whatever. And now we're here surrounded by the lights and the fog and the jib arms coming in. It's incredible.
I'm glad that you like it, Gary.
I love it.
I love it a lot, and I'm glad that I get to spend time with you and, of course, my remote gaming dad, Mr. Paris Lily. Paris, how you doing? We're sending you a lot of love and positivity from the set.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm the only jabroni that's still remote at this
point.
Yeah,
I wasn't trying to rub it in or anything, Paris.
No, you know what? I truly need to find an excuse to come up there.
Yep.
Just because we got to do it, all three of us on set.
For sure.
One of these days soon. So I got to figure out a good excuse to just, I don't know if I'm a drive, fly up or whatever, but I got to come up there. Because again, like you already said, Gary, the studio is amazing being up there and just trying to let it all sink in. So I want to be a part of it.
Yeah, it's week three in the studio. We're still having fun. It's got that new car smell to it. We're
very
checking
much the
it
new
out.
Car smell.
All
yeah.
the bright lights are firing off. And, of course, we get to hang out and talk all things Xbox here on the Kinda Funny XCast, which should be a good one. I mean, a lot of things to talk about, because I'm going to pose to you both the question of, can Xbox bring it in 2023? Do they have the juice, as the young kids say, Gary Whitta? And we'll find that out. I need to know what you two think. But, of course, welcome in, everybody. This is the Kinda Funny XCast. We post each and every Thursday at 6 a.m. West Coast, Best Coast time on YouTube.com/KindaFunnyGames. And, of course, on your favorite podcast service all around the globe. We got a whole lot of dope content coming your way. If you're a Kinda Funny fan, get ready, because you have some really awesome stuff. Of course, today, as you're hearing this live, the God of War Ragnarok review should be up over on YouTube.com/KindaFunnyGames. The Games cast crew is talking at 9 a.m. West Coast, Best Coast time, live on Twitch and on YouTube for your enjoyment. They're going to give you their God of War Ragnarok spoiler-free review for all of you. One of the biggest games of the year, so you can check that out. And, of course, our producer and director, Barrett Courtney, put out a really awesome special, Kinda Funny Presents, a video essay all about God of War and Kratos' growth.
Yeah, it looks like he went all out with that video.
He went all out on this one. Of course, he's showing it right now. And I do want to give a whole lot of props, the flowers to Baird. Got the video floor out.
Love
got
it.
The
yes.
big video
floor.
Wall.
Love it.
And talked all things Kratos. So, Baird, why don't you sell my two gaming dads and the best friends on what you just did here?
Well, you know, if you're a smart person who has a PlayStation, right? I don't know about all these Xbox who may not know a God of War if it hit them in the face, right? All honesty, right? A lot of us are excited for God of War Ragnarok, including myself, who had only played God of War 2018 up until a few months ago when I decided to go back to the original games. And so this is a kind of a deep dive into my interpretation of Kratos as a character, his character growth, possibly lack thereof, and how that all might possibly tie into his end, possibly in Ragnarok. I know they talk about the new games being a duology and stuff like that. So just kind of looking at his story so far and what that may mean for his end, and kind of looking back at his character growth and deciding if he's actually become better throughout the last 17 years.
I like that op-ed. I encourage everyone to go check out that special video up right now. My two gaming dads. You guys are both very similar to Kratos. You've had kids. You've grown
a
lot.
Dads.
You've had character moments. But I do want to ask you the question over on the Xbox side or any game in general. What are some good character development moments that you've seen from franchises with, you know, a strong leading character that has grown a lot in your eyes? You guys have any that stick out to you?
I just want to say, first of all, I'm very flattered, but aside from the fact that Paris and I are both dads, I think with me, the Kratos comparisons begin and end there. Paris could probably pull off a much more convincing Kratos cosplay than I ever could. Holy shit. Sorry, I was composing my joke. What was the question again?
Who has some of the best character development in games that you've seen out of some characters that are long-term franchise holders?
Yeah, if you talk about duologies, if you look at the two Last of Us games, I think that relationship between Joel and Ellie obviously, you know, is fascinating, particularly in the second game. I know a lot of people didn't love it, but, you know, because I think they were upset about certain choices that were made. But I thought it was very mature, very intelligent, kind of nuanced storytelling that they did. And, you know, and that's obviously there are kind of, you know, father-child themes that play into that as well. Those are always really, really popular themes in storytelling. Off the top of my head, I'm trying to think of another one that, you know, and I've got to do it again. And I always come back to it, but I'm going to go back to Yakuza Like a Dragon and say Ichiban Kasuga is one of the greatest protagonists in all of video game history. That game, more than anything, is a story about the enduring power of friendship. And if you have, you'll appreciate this, Mike. If you have your friends around you, you can accomplish the impossible. And that's what that game teaches you more than anything else.
I love that game. That's how I feel on the X-Cast every week. So I like that right there. Paris, Lily, what are some of your big character development moments for some characters?
Well, not to make this the PlayStation show, but I'd also have to throw Nathan Drake in there from Uncharted to see where he ended up, you know, by the time we got to Uncharted 4. I think that's a good one. But I've been scratching my head, honestly, trying to think of an Xbox-centric character, and really two kind of stick out in my head. I mean, it may not necessarily be the father-son dynamic, but Marcus Fenix. I mean, think about where Marcus Fenix started at the beginning of Gears of War and where we currently see him now, you know, has it spanned across all the way to Gears 5. I think he's obviously had a lot of character development. Obviously, he's had a son, his own son during that time. But I even think about, you know, his relationship with Dom and what that meant to him as well is a really good one where you've seen character growth over the years. And then realistically, you have to say Master Chief.
Yes.
I think he went from someone that barely said anything to really, by the time you got to Halo 3 and beyond, you saw that character development and that relationship grow with Cortana.
Yeah, I was going to bring up Halo and that recent Halo Infinite. I actually really connected with that story and liked the growth of Master Chief along with the pilots and, of course, the new AI, you know, Cortana saying goodbye and moving forward. I really liked that character growth.
I think, you know, when people say Master Chief and great character development, I struggle with it a little bit because I never really felt that Master Chief himself is a great character. But when you talk to me about Cortana and that relationship, I start to perk up a little bit because the whole thing with Cortana and her rampancy, you know, it's like it kind of makes me feel a little bit like, I don't want to get like too serious, but like what it must be like to kind of lose someone to mental illness, the idea of someone that's kind of like losing, you know, because, you know, her program is kind of corrupting and going bad. Like she's conceived and designed to be, you know, a force for good, right? But then kind of goes horribly evil, but just because of this, her program is essentially falling apart. Yeah. But I always think that I for some reason I've always kind of felt like it lost attempt to my grandfather. That there's nothing scarier than like watching someone become someone that you don't recognize anymore because their mind is changing and succumbing to the ravages of an illness. And I've always, I don't know how intentional that might have been on the Halo writer's part, but the idea that losing someone that you love, not because they're physically degrading, but mentally degrading, I think is terrifying. Yeah. And I maybe because of my own experiences with my family, I read some of that into the Cortana story.
I like that a lot, Gary. That's really well said on that one. So, of course, go check out a whole lot of content right now over on YouTube.com/KindaFunnyGames. And, of course, over on our YouTube.com/KindaFunny, you can check out all the Prime podcasts, all the fun entertainment podcasts as well. But don't forget, we are Epic Games partners, which means if you are buying a new look in Fortnite, Rocket League or Fall Guys, or maybe you're buying a season pass in any of those games, please use our Epic creator code KindaFunny at checkout to help support the team in a brand new way. And my gaming dads, we're going to talk a whole lot about support right now, because during the month of October, we opened up the brand new spare bedroom studio. We asked for the Kind of Funny best friends to come out and help support and fundraise the next year of content and all these awesome milestones and initiatives and pieces of content that we want to do. And man, oh man, they came out with a whole lot of support. So I have a long list of Patreon producers for the month of November that I need to read out. So please bear with me as I get through all these names. Morgan Lorraine, Fargo Brady, Christopher Rodriguez, the Kind of Funny Destiny 2 PC clan. You can squad up with them anytime and play some Destiny 2 if you like. Tall Tree 81, Joseph A. Carlson, 1UP Pest Control, Carrie Palmer, Elliot, Brian Channey, Trevor Starkey, Super Daddy Kyle, Undertopia, David Mintel, the Mind Freak, Eric Vasquez. Eric Velasquez. Thank you so much for that one. Scotty Wyatt, Alex Gertal, Al Tribesman, the Predator, Jason L., James Davis, at James Davis Makes, Mick at the Nanobiologist, Ryan T. from Tennessee, Derek Griag, and Donald Eccles. Of course, if I mispronounce your name, guess what? We have a whole month to get better. I promise you on that one. But thank
and
you so much.
And maybe one of the episodes he'll actually wear glasses so he can actually read the names.
But once you start laughing at some of the names, like Super Daddy Kyle, it's tough to come back, everybody. It's tough to come back. Super Daddy Kyle got me. But, of course, this week, the Kind of Funny X-Cast is sponsored by the official The Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power podcast, Rocket Money, and Chime. But we'll tell you all about that in just a little bit. Guys, I want to start this episode off with some fun. I want to know what you've been playing, what you've been doing over this past week. Personally, I'll start with you. What has been in your Xbox? What have you been playing?
I hope I'm saying this right. Signalis. Am I saying that right? I hope I'm saying that
Signalis,
right.
Signalis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I started playing that the other night. Man, it's freaking great. It's really great. That's why I tweeted about it and was suggesting people go check it out. I mean, if you're into kind of horror slash a little bit of sci-fi experience, it's really good. I'm blanking on the studio's name off the top of my head, but I'm really loving it. It's on Game Pass. So it's like, why not? Go check it out. I love the retro look to it, the graphic style to it, and it's just a fantastic game. A lot of fun.
Yeah, it looks almost like an old like flashback or out of this world type game. I want to check it out. By the way, have you know, Mike, just in general, you know, this coming November, I mean, we're into November now. Yeah. The first 2 weeks of November, Microsoft announced their the Xbox, like the first 2 weeks of Game Pass in November. Bangers across the board,
Gary, and we're going to talk about some of those bangers, but I mean, some really exciting ones. Have you seen, is there one that sticks out to you as I pull up my list right now for you?
Well, I mean, I would need the list in front of me to remind myself.
Why don't
I remember
you read
looking
that
at it yesterday. Oh my goodness.
Know.
So, well, let's see what we got here. So, so obviously Football Manager, you know.
Football Manager. I need
very,
to ask
very
you
much
about
my manager. My alley. Monkey Island, the return to Monkey Island.
Yes.
I didn't even know that was. It was initially announced for PC and Switch only. I'm like, well, where's the Xbox and the PlayStation versions? Well, guess what? Here they are, and on Game Pass.
There you go.
So I love that. That's coming November 10th. This is the big one, Vampire Survivors. Now, as I've said before, you cannot have a serious conversation about God of War this, Elden Ring that. Yeah. You cannot have a serious conversation about a game of the year without a little $3 game on Steam called Vampire Survivors, which has just been, like, everyone who touches it, like, it's game over. Like, you know, you're never playing another game. You're hooked. And now it's coming to Xbox and it's on Game Pass. I mean, again, it looks like, there's nothing to look at, but I'm telling you, this game has got the juice. Paris, I know, wants to jump in.
Yeah, just to jump in on that really quick, because I kept hearing about Vampire Survivors. Oh, you got to play it. It's so great. And I just hadn't played it. Do you know it's already on PC Game Pass and has been for a while?
Yeah.
I had no idea. I had no idea of that. I just thought it was just on Steam.
But a lot of people are waiting for the console version. So that's an even bigger step. And then these are two huge ones for me. I wasn't super excited about Pentiment when they first showed it.
Yes.
But I've been getting more excited the more I've seen.
Yeah.
Pentiment is coming November 15th. And then another big one for me, huge for me, Somerville. from, I think, some of the team that made Limbo.
That's correct.
And Inside. Mm-hmm. Inside in particular is still one of my all-time favorite games. This is obviously a very similar vibe. And this is just the first 2 weeks of November in Game Pass.
Solid.
There's some incredible games on that list.
Yeah, really great offering right there. Paris, any of those stick out to you as we talk a little bit about Game Pass update for November?
No, exactly what Gary said, Somerville. I'm really looking forward to checking that out. That was like, because for some reason, I didn't think it was coming this year. I thought it was coming next year. And then when that obviously got announced, hey, not only is it coming in November, but it's on Game Pass. I'm like, yep, sign me up. Really looking forward to it.
I'm super looking excited for this to score big on our Fantasy Critic League.
I mean, look at it. I mean, like, it's got that Limbo Inside DNA mm-hmm. all
oh,
over.
Beautiful.
Look
there.
At it. Looks tremendous.
Yeah, this one was the one that stuck out to me along with Replaced, which I know Paris is very excited about. That one got pushed towards 2023. But I mean,
that Pentiment. I mean, just forget about all the that Pentiment, Vampire Survivors, and Return to Monkey Island. That's just in the first 2 weeks of November.
Solid game.
Incredible.
Yeah, and a couple of really good games leaving the service that I got to highlight. The Art of Rally. Gary, I think you and I have played this. That beautiful car driving game that really stands out.
The arcade type one?
Yeah. Yep. Uh-huh. You got to check that one out. It's really, really special. So I hope people check out The Art of Rally once again, because that leaves on November 15th and is well worth your time. Paris, besides Signalis, have you been playing anything else?
On Xbox, I'm trying to think what I can say I've been playing. I mean, obviously God of War on PlayStation. I've been playing that as well. What else have I been playing? I have not played Persona 5 this week.
Okay.
Oh, how'd you like it so far, though?
Just due to other stuff. I'm enjoying it so far. I get why Barrett is so in love with it and why so many other people love it. But the time sink on that looks enormous.
Yeah,
so,
like I said, 100 hours minimum.
Yeah. And, you know, and I guess we never really talked about it, but A Plague Tale's Requiem, I never say that right, but Plague's Tale is fantastic. I would put that as a borderline type of game of the year contender. Now, I did not play the first one, so this was kind of my first entry, you know, to Amicia and Hugo and just that whole story and the plague and all the rats. And I love the stealth and the puzzle elements that you kind of get kind of using the rats to your advantage and then, you know, disadvantage with some of the enemies and the light and the dark aspect of it as well. So really, really fantastic. But that story is phenomenal.
Yeah, my wife loved that first game. So she's excited to play this new one.
Yeah, and it's on Game Pass. So
It's on Game Pass.
I like that. Gary, what have you been playing lately?
Continuing with the Modern Warfare 2 campaign, which I'm now feeling like I have to rush to finish because the spoilers are now starting to pop off. I'm not going to go on a whole rant, but like, so I had a very close encounter with a Modern Warfare 2 campaign late stage story spoiler right there in the thumbnail on YouTube. And bang. I literally kind of went, oh, look away, like before it like sunk in because I didn't want to see it. Really annoyed me. Still really enjoying it. It's been interesting to read a lot of the, you know, as every Modern Warfare game that comes out, right, there are these problematic issues that surface, right? You know, you've seen the thing about the de-escalate. A lot of people don't maybe notice that.
Saw that.
You don't de-escalate a situation by pointing your gun at someone.
Yeah, not a fan of that one.
That kind of thing. You know, and various, you know, just there was some, again, pulling stuff from the real world that some people found distasteful. But again, if you look at it just as a piece of kind of trashy, you know, like Gerard Butler action movie, Jack Ryan, you know, boys with high-tech toys kind of action movie, it scratches that itch so well. The characters are really cool. That the Mexican special ops guy, Alejandro, is just such a badass.
So good.
The holy trinity of Soap, Ghost, and Price, just brilliant all day long. It's super, super fun. I'm still enjoying all the gunplay, still enjoying the incredibly high-end visuals of it. It's a ton of fun. And beyond that, I always find myself like spending time with little oddball games. So a company sent me a code. I didn't know this, but they're even remaking it. But they sent me a code for something called Arkanoid Eternal Battle. Okay. Arkanoid, this probably is before your time, but back in the 80s, Taito made essentially what was a new version of Breakout. So it's essentially just Breakout, you know, kind of swatting at the bricks with a little bat that goes back and forth. But it added power-ups and, you know, what at the time were kind of high-end graphics and stuff like that. And it was basically a new version of Breakout. Well, it's back again. Barrett is so fast pulling these clips up. I love it. So that's what Arkanoid.
Oh,
that's
who doesn't
Arkanoid,
love that game? This
so
is
that's,
a great game,
that's the
Gary.
Retro mode. That's what Arkanoid looked like back in the day.
Oh, I love this one. Right? This is in Brick Breaker. Isn't that what the young kids call this, Brick Breaker?
Well, I mean, so Breakout was the original, and now here is like the, I think this is called like the new Nuevo, whatever they call it, the new Neo. It's the Neo version.
Okay,
essentially the same game, but with a new features and higher end graphics. And what's really exciting, I want to get into, is there's a 25 player battle royale.
Oh, you know, I love battle royale.
Well, you know, we love BRs around here. And I love thinking and talking about how the Battle Royale format has been surprisingly agile, right? You have the Battle Royale Mario, Battle Royale Pac-Man, Battle Royale Tetris. Well, now there's Battle Royale Arkanoid. Paris, again, the dad over there, I mean, you nodded a little bit when I said Arkanoid. You remember Arkanoid,
right?
Oh, yeah,
I totally remember that, yeah.
So I'm really glad that's back. It's a little indie title. I don't know how much it costs because, again, they sent me a code, but they're on the Microsoft Game Store. Right now, not on, one of the few titles not on Game Pass, apparently, but really, really enjoying it. If you, again, you like these old-fashioned brick breakers, and here's something else I discovered today. This is so perfectly timed. So you know how they're bringing out this Atari 50th anniversary collection of like all the classic Atari games?
Yes.
The mad scientists over at Digital Eclipse, some of my friends over there, they've made. So I was complaining about this the other day, like when I was playing. I think I was playing like Breakout Recharge, which is another, you know, Atari brought back the original Breakout, and I was thinking about how I would love it if you could somehow simulate paddle controls on a gamepad, because there's nothing that simulates like a dial-style paddle control. Yeah, yeah. And I was thinking about how if you could just take the little thumbstick and just like twist it and rotate it and treat it like a paddle, that would be really cool. But obviously it would have to be engineered that way.
Yeah.
The guys at Digital Eclipse, this is so cool. Go and check out their Twitter account. They show you how to do it. They 3D printed a dial paddle controller that will clamp over your Xbox controller.
Cool.
And you can controls the thumbstick, but you can twist it like a paddle.
They've made
all the 3D printing designs available free online, so you can print out your own paddle controller, stick it on your Xbox controller, and play Breakout and play Night Driver and all those classic games that required Pong. You know, again, was always best with a dial paddle. You can actually recreate that now. As long as you can 3D print it, you can create the original classic controls. You ever play four-player Warlords?
No.
In the arcades with that dial paddle control? I mean, there's nothing like it.
I like this idea, Gary. Yeah. I like this. I mean, I am a big fan of Brick Breaker. I'm sure that's the wrong name for that, but I like this game that he's showing us, Arkanoids. I'm going to check that out.
There was Arkanoid, and then there was Arkanoid 2, The Revenge of Doe. Doe was like the evil boss from the original Arkanoid. Okay. You should get it. We can play. You can play head-to-head. You can play BR.
I mean, we got a battle royale.
Well, once I get this paddle, I'm going to be unbeatable. I'm telling you. I'm going to 3D print one of these paddles, and I'm going to play old school.
Okay.
I had the original paddle controllers for the Atari 2600 because some games only worked, like, again, Pong and things like that.
Yeah.
And Breakout was another classic example. Like, you can move the little thing back and forth with, you know, with your thumbstick or whatever, or even with a mouse. It's not the same. You gotta have the paddle. It's like trying to play Missile Command without a trackball. You gotta have the trackball.
Okay, it's like playing Golden Tee without the trackball.
I can see, you know, Mike starting to glaze. As I go deeper and deeper into the Stone Age of gaming, Mike's just nodding along.
Well, I'm just like, I'm trying to put it into my world of like, what have I played? Golden Tee. Everybody's played Golden Tee at the bar.
A classic trackball, right?
If you don't have the trackball on Golden Bee or Golden Tee, you're not playing Golden Tee.
When I was a heavy drinker back in the day, I used to drink in this one bar that was on the corner of my neighborhood. And they had a Golden Tee machine.
Yeah.
And it was one of those, because remember, there was a time when Golden Tee ruled the earth. It was everywhere.
I still think that day is now.
The ones that were hooked up onto the internet and you could be in the global, the global
you
and the local rankings.
Day is now. Is that what you just said, Mike?
Hold up. You're telling me that everyone on this X-Cast set right now, if we walked into a bar and they had Golden Tee, we're not walking up to that and smacking that?
100%.
Thank you.
And
are your parents, are we smacking that?
Yeah, of course we are.
Were you smacking that with us? You know you are.
Were you a big hitter? Were you like the guy that like really wrecked it?
Yeah,
of course you were.
Of course.
You gotta let the big dog eat. I'm gonna get that fairway driver.
I love that.
Loved it. Okay, I loved Golden Tee.
That's what you've been playing. What else?
Arkanoid, Modern Warfare. I'm still playing through Coffee Talk, which is this little kind of story game, little visual novel on Game Pass that I'm really enjoying. And again, we're not supposed to talk about it. And I can't because I literally just installed it, but I got an early code for, we were just talking about Pentiment, which I want to try. That's probably going to be, as soon as I'm done with the Modern Warfare campaign. I have a God of War Ragnarok code as well. We shouldn't really be talking about PlayStation stuff. They've got their own show for that. I still never finished the original God of War, so I have to finish that. I probably won't get to Ragnarok until
the 2005
next year.
Game?
2009.
No, sorry, the 2000. I say original. I mean, the original, the reboot, 2018.
You got to play that one.
I got to finish it. Must play. And I got to, and then I'll move. But again, I tend to play games like I don't like the pressure. And this is true with TV as well, is I don't like the pressure of feeling like I have to watch whatever else everyone else is watching that's in the zeitgeist right now. Because it's like, in order to keep up with the conversation on social media and avoid and become spoiler immune.
Yeah.
Right? Because spoilers fly thick and fast. You know, YouTube thumbnails, on Twitter, everywhere. You mute hashtags, but they find a way around it. It's a constant battle, like whack-a-mole, trying not to get spoiled. But when I feel like, oh, this is the game that's like in the zeitgeist, it's in the frame right now. Like right now, everyone's talking about God of War because it's, you know, just about to come out and the reviews are dropping. It's like, I feel like it almost makes me not want to play it because it feels like homework in order to play. It's like, I hope you did all your required reading so you can come to the conversation and take part. It's like, I just want to play what I want to play. And I'll play the games that I want to play on my own. There are some games, like Modern Warfare, anytime that campaign drops, I will get to it right away.
Yeah.
Because I just want to play it as soon as possible. But if there's a game that I'm like, I could see myself playing that, but it's like, oh no, but you got to play because it's what everyone's talking about right now. It kind of makes me want to rebel against it. And like, no, I'm going to go play like fucking Arkanoid or some weird shit over here. And I'll play that, you know, when I get to it.
I'm a rebel, Mike.
I'm an iconoclast.
I love that you do that, Gary. You set your own terms. That's right. I love that about you. I do want to circle back before I tell you about what I've been playing. You talked about spoilers, Gary. I want to know from my two gaming dads, a little side conversation, when can we spoil things? You brought up Modern Warfare, and you're avoiding spoilers. We're the first week, 2 weeks now. When is the spoiler conversation for you, Gary, and then you, Paris, after that?
For games?
For games.
I mean, like, if it's like an epic story game, like something like a God of War.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, like, you know that, and obviously God of War is a bad example because it leaked early, right? Mm-hmm. Some retailers were selling it early. But, like, even if you assume that it's, like, everyone starts at like midnight on day one.
Yeah.
You know there are gonna be spoilers up on the internet, like speedrunners right and people that are just gonna like burn through it so fast that the spoilers could be up within hours. Like end game spoilers could be up will be up within hours.
Yeah.
Right? And what's reasonable though, for a game like God of War, which I'm guessing is probably like 20, 30 hours to play through. I mean, I have no idea. I'm just making that number up, but it seems like it's that kind of thing to play all the way through the story. Maybe it's less, I don't know. I think like at least a couple of weeks, like not everyone, again, especially me, like I'm a dad, I've got two kids. By the time I get both kids to bed, I'm exhausted. Maybe I got half an hour to play a game. I feel like I'm constantly waging that battle against like trying to keep up with the social media conversation and not get spoiled. I think reasonably for like a story intensive game, like and especially end game stuff and late stuff and story stuff, at least a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Before you start running your mouth on social media.
I like
and then
that.
Even then, at least like do a warning or a spoiler warning or something. If you want to put, this is what really annoys, the YouTube thing annoys me in particular. If you want to put spoilers in a YouTube video, by all means do it, but don't put it right in the title of the video or on the thumbnail where there's a chance that it's going to get me in a drive-by. I'm scrolling past my recommended. I didn't even ask to see it. It's just, oh, the algorithm's decided. You clicked on a God of War video 2 years ago, so how about we tell you the end of God of War 2 right now before you even played it? No, fuck off.
Yeah.
It annoys me.
Paris, what about you on spoilers? I mean, you are Mr. Social Media, so you're always driving the conversation. Where do you got to be, Paris?
Well, I was just about to say, I get my hand slapped so much with, like, not gaming stuff, but, like, TV movie stuff where I'm not giving a specific spoiler, but I might hint towards something and someone says, oh, that's a spoiler, and I go, oh, crap, I delete it. I'm with Gary. You got to at least give it a few weeks. But even then, I try to – I don't want to just fully just spoil whatever it is. I feel like you got to give it a few months for exactly what Gary was saying. It's like – not everyone's going to be able to play something day and date right away and be able to get through it. It might take people weeks, even months before they complete the story. So I try to always be very sensitive to that and dance around it. Like as an example, even Halo Infinite, I don't try to spoil how that ended even now, because I feel like there's people that haven't played it, you know, as an example. So like Gary just talked about, he hasn't completed the first God of War. I don't think I've ever talked about the ending to the first God of War publicly, because as much as I love that game, I know again that not everyone's completed it. And obviously here we go now with Ragnarok, you know, it's going to be even more heightened, but social media and especially YouTube with the thumbnails, man, they spoil so many things for people that if you really want to watch something, if you really don't want to be spoiled, like I have that anxiety, like with movies like Wakanda Forever, going Thursday night, Right. 6 o'clock. I don't want anything to be spoiled. So let me just get it out of the way, you know, before anyone has a chance, you know, to do it. So I try to be very, very conscious of it, but I've learned even hinting around at stuff people.
And that doesn't mean you have to like tiptoe around people for weeks and you can't talk about it. Like, you know, I get it. Right. Let's say you love God of War and you play it and you finish it in a couple of days and you can't wait to talk about it.
Yeah.
By all means, talk about it, but just be aware of like not causing collateral damage when you're talking about it. Like, you can go to forums, you know, you can go to play, and you can talk about it on Twitter in a way. Like, I mean, I would love it if they added, like, for example, like spoiler tags and spoiler, let me click on the little, you know, redacted text, but then I'll click on it.
Okay, we can add that, Gary, but we're going to charge you $50
a month. Is that another $8
a month? $8 a month.
He's going to put that in the subscription services.
We'll get Stephen King to complain about it and get 50% off. That bugs me. But like, again, at some point it does, I would say at some point, it's a good question, Mike, at some point, like, the burden of responsibility shifts over to me. Exactly. And what I mean by that is, let's say, I just said I haven't finished God of War 2018, right? And that's 4 years old now, that game. So if you now were to, like, drop a God of War ending spoiler on me, I've got no right to complain about that. Right. You spoiled that for me. So, but to which you would have every right to say, well, if you haven't, you had 4 years to play it. If you haven't played it in 4 years, how much can you really claim to care about the ending?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's a moving target. It depends on the game and it depends on the audience. But and so you always have to, and different people have different sensitivities. Like Parrish just touched on the idea that some people might consider, you should show the same piece of material to different people. One person might consider that a spoiler and the other person wouldn't. So they've all got their own sensitivities to it. So it's a minefield, both as someone who doesn't want to be spoiled, and it's also a minefield for someone who wants to, you know, be conscious of not spoiling it for other people, so you're careful about what you say. But then of course you have the fucking maniacs who want to spoil it for people.
Yes.
The people that drove by, you know, the bookstore at 2 o'clock in the morning shouting, oh, this major Harry Potter character dies, but just to be assholes about it. And we know that people are doing that because it's like their lives are so fucking bereft of any real joy that the only way they can
it's
derive
they
any sense
do that in
happiness
person.
Is by knowing, by taking it from other people.
On the internet, it makes sense, but it's wild that people were doing that in person where there was like the reality someone could like chase after them and like, I don't know, give them a little slap or something.
Outrageous.
Wild.
Well, you know how crazy it is with social media and the spoilers. Like, I mentioned something about Henry Cavill in Black Adam and people got mad at me, and I'm thinking, The Rock has been spoiling this for weeks. Yeah, this isn't a secret anymore, but even that people consider a spoiler, so I try to be careful.
Paris, people didn't want you spoiling the very mediocre movie, okay? Come on.
But I do want our watchers and listeners, no matter where you are, let us know what is spoiler territory for you. I like that of, like, you spoiling something, and then on the other side, how long is too long for you to be holding on?
Yeah,
to
and
that
again, there's no, like it's not an exact science. It's different for everyone. It depends on the game. It depends on the medium. Like, there's, you know, again, like the Book of Eli has a big thing at the end of it that could be considered a spoiler. Yeah. The movie's 12 years old. If you haven't seen it, then it's not my responsibility for you to not be spoiled.
I like that. I like that, Gary. For me, I have some encouraging words for you, Gary. If you're really enjoying the Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 campaign, try Spec Ops once you're done. Grab one buddy. It's a two-person experience. There's three levels up right now. And once again, they hit you with some incredible, incredible cinematics at the beginning where you get amped up and excited with your squad. And then they hit you with one really dope one. I've played two out of the three missions. One was very cool. It's very stealth. Felt like Metal Gear Solid, where you had to avoid detection, go in stealth, and work in tandem with your co-op partner. And then the other one, totally uninspired. It was just you holding down 6 hard points for like 15 minutes. Not fun at all to do, but it is cool to see the cinematics come back into a multiplayer mode and really hit hard.
I used to love those. I thought it was one of when Modern Warfare first, like post PUBG, like when I first saw that video of you being like being cinematically kind of like heli airdropped into the combat zone, and then it seamlessly you're playing the game.
Yeah,
I thought that was fantastic.
Oh, you're gonna like this one. I also played Fall Guys with the new Ghostbuster costumes, and I have to encourage you, if you enjoy Fall Guys, they have a lot of great costumes right now.
I mean,
it's awesome.
That's been interesting to see since they've switched to this microtransaction model. Yeah. You'll notice that it's new skins all the time now. That's how they're monetizing the game. They just dropped the Doctor Who skin pack.
He-Man's on the way.
He-Man is on the way.
Yeah.
Because they did this with Sonic as well, is when they drop these skins, they also do special themed events. Basically, you know, so with Sonic, it was like go around and collect the rings. I think they're doing some kind of Battle for Eternia type event with the He-Man and the Skeletor skins. I like what they're doing with Fall Guys right now. They're keeping it fresh.
I'm liking what they're doing with Fall Guys. I am still waiting the map editor. And I think there's some small tweaks for someone like me who has played a bunch, who creates a lot of content and likes streaming it a lot. I think there's some small you know, improvements of life that can be improved upon, right? Like, for me, those custom games, Gary, I think I need a little more onus. I need to be able to choose the next map or make my own playlist. I don't like having it up to Mediatonic, who changes the playlists on the regular, or the playlists just don't fit the play style of me and the community that I'm playing with. If I had more control over that, man, oh man, I think the
more
custom
customization's
games would be
always
really
good.
Better.
And I agree. I think that when that level editor drops, that's going to be a whole new experience.
It's going to be real special. And then finally, Ghostbuster Spirits Unleashed. You know, we haven't talked about it here on this podcast, but we did talk about it with Greggy over on the Kind of Funny Games cast. But I've been playing a lot of Ghostbuster Spirits Unleashed with the crew here at Kind of Funny, and I've really enjoyed that multiplayer game. There is truly and honestly something special in that game that Illphonic made, right? I think it's one of their best so far. You can see the quality. You can see the love that they put into the Ghostbusters world. Being able to create your and customize your character has so much depth. The game has a lot of depth when it comes to different ghosts that you can be, to the Ghostbusters and different, you know, wands that you can put on, all the different tactics you can have. But the issue for me is it comes down to gameplay, and they only have one game mode, and I think that's its biggest hindrance is once you play that X amount of hours, it kind of gets boring of this is the same thing over and over again. And I think that's the tough part that you get into with these 4v1 games. Unless you have a cult classic like Dead by Daylight, a lot of these just tend to miss the mark when it comes to 1 month, 3 months, 6 months down the road of can we still keep doing the same thing?
I mean, I didn't even know they had a multiplayer mode. I was mainly when I go. The stuff I've been learning mainly on the story side. But if they follow what has been kind of the typical roadmap for these multiplayer backends is, you know, they'll be, oh, now we've added this mode, you know, 3 months in, there's like, you know, they need to, it doesn't sound like they shipped with a whole lot. Again, it's the problem that Halo, how many times have we talked about it, Halo Infinite, and how they needed, you know, they desperately needed to add more game modes and more variety more quickly, because, you know, I've told this story on the Xcast a million times. I played so much Halo, like almost every waking hour, and then I just hit a wall where I was like, I need more things to do. I don't want to just keep playing the same maps in the game, and they lost me. And it's like that, you know how like they say like car dealers never want to let you walk away. It's like, what, they'll do anything to like, what I need to do, put you in this car. They don't want you to walk away because like, you always say like, I'll come back. I need to go away. I just want to get out of this situation. I'll walk away and I'll come back. But car dealers know that 99% of the time you don't come back.
Yep.
So they've got to get, they don't want you to walk away because you will not, and that's the problem. When you, it's same true with a multiplayer game. Once the magic wears off and you go, I'm done with this game, and you walk away, it's really, really hard to get players to come back.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the challenges they've been facing. Yeah.
That's right. So I look forward to seeing more from that game because I think they have a good core, but I think they need to add on pretty quick here to keep that player base engaged and having fun. But guys, I want to pose you the question just after these word from our sponsors. We'll see you in a moment.
Are you wasting money on subscriptions? 80% of people have subscriptions they forgot about. Do you know how much your subscriptions really cost? Well, most Americans think they spend around $80 a month on subscriptions when the actual total is closer to more than $200. That's right! You could be wasting hundreds of dollars each month on subscriptions you don't even know about. There's this app Tim loves using that takes care of all of that for him. It's called Rocket Money, formerly known as Truebill. The app shows all your subscriptions in one place and then cancels for you whatever you don't still want. Tim loves it. It's great. You should use it. Rocket Money can even find subscriptions you didn't even know you were still paying for. You may even find that you've been double charged for a subscription. To cancel a subscription, all you have to do is press cancel and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. Get rid of useless subscriptions with Rocket Money now. Go to rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny. Seriously, it could save you hundreds of dollars per year. Cancel your unnecessary subscriptions right now at rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny. That's rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny. Go deeper into the canals of Numenor, the mines of Khazad Dûm, and more with the official The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power podcast. Host Felicia Day and several special guests provide an inside look at the groundbreaking series and what it took to bring Middle-earth to life. Each episode of the official podcast features exclusive interviews with the series showrunners J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay, including the very first full breakdown of the incredible season finale. Felicia goes behind the scenes with the cast and crew to bring you jaw-dropping stories and Easter eggs you won't want to miss. Watch The Rings of Power on Prime Video and listen to all 8 episodes of the official The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power podcast for free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app now. What's the first thing you do when you wake up? Is it checking up on your credit score? Didn't think so. At Chime, that's exactly what they do. Their members see an increase of 30 points on average, with payday up to 2 days early and fee-free overdrafts up to $200. So start your credit journey with Chime. Sign up takes only 2 minutes and it doesn't affect your credit score. Get started at chime.com/kfgames. That's chime.com/kfgames. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by Stride Bank NA pursuant to the license from Visa USA Chime checking account and $200 qualifying direct deposit required to apply for the secured Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card. Regular on-time payment history can have a positive effect on your credit score. Impact to your score may vary and some user scores may not improve. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal fees may apply except at MoneyPass ATMs in a 7-Eleven or any Allpoint or Visa Plus Alliance ATM. So, again, start your credit journey with Chime. Sign up takes only 2 minutes, doesn't affect your credit score. Get started at chime.com/kfgames. That's chime.com/kfgames.
Guys, we got a fun one here. Of course, Phil Spencer sat down on the Same Brain podcast. It had a lot of really great conversations and talking points that I highly encourage our audience to go check out over on that YouTube channel. A really great podcast for you to listen to and have some fun. Of course, anytime Phil Spencer sits down, you should probably listen and see what he's talking about. But I've highlighted a couple, and that's going to get us into our main topic of, does Xbox have the juice for 2023? Can they win 2023 with a number of games that they have announced and have upcoming? But let's talk about that podcast, because there was a couple of cool moments there, a couple of cool key pieces. On the Game Pass side, Phil Spencer mentioned a lot of growth over on the PC side of things, and also they're looking to improve the Xbox app, which myself and Paris and Gary have spoke a lot about. Everyone has been vocal about that app. But, of course, the PC side, a lot of growth being seen there. On the console side, seeing a little bit of a slowdown, right? He says that they think they've reached the almost the maximum of people with a console that you could, right? And I think that's an interesting conversation of what is that maximum thing? Where's your next market, say, you're going to go attack? Of course, mobile and PC are clearly the next parts of the ecosystem that you look at. But interesting to hear the console side slowing down.
Yeah, by the way, and that contraction is not confined to the Xbox. So I read a story this morning that PlayStation Plus, since they added those new tiers, and that was supposed to be like the reboot, yeah, PlayStation Plus 2.0, Sony's lost 2 million players since they rebooted that. So, and there was a number of, you know, I think very valid reasons they gave. It was like now that the pandemic's lifting, people just want to get, like, people were playing games more when they locked at home. Now that, you know, the doors are opening and people can go out, people are going out and spending less time playing games, and maybe they were too confusing with the tiers and various other things. But, like, it does seem like there is kind of a, I would think, like, a little bit of a, I guess in the financial markets, they would call a correction, right? There was a massive, massive boost in online multiplayer gaming and gaming in general. Yeah. Things you could do at home while the pandemic was really biting down. Now that it's starting to lift a little bit, that you are seeing that correction, I think, and people are gaming a little bit less.
Yeah, mentioned that he's really pleased with not only the customer side, but also the creator side. Seeing returning creators and publishers coming back to the service, he's really, really pleased with. And, of course, he's happy that the creators are happy with the discoverability. And that's something we talk about all the time here on the show, right, is the discoverability aspect for not only the customers, but for the creators not to get lost in the shuffle. And I think Paris had a good tweet today all about, hey, we should have a better Xbox show that highlights some of these awesome creators and developers and maybe showcase what they're currently making. But Paris, when we talk about that Game Pass segment that Phil spoke about, do you agree with most of that, of seeing the PC side grow, maybe console hitting a limit, but of course many players waiting for more games to resubscribe maybe?
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at it is it's math. I mean, think about it. We don't know the exact number of consoles that they have in the market right now, and I'm talking the X and the S, but there's only so many that are currently out there. And basically what Phil Spencer was saying is only a certain percentage of your audience is going to want to invest in being a subscriber of a service like Game Pass. So that's why he said that percentage, the percentage will stay the same, but the number of people will grow as they get more consoles, as they get more hardware out there into the market. But then when you look at the PC side of it, and you look at the mobile side of it, that number just absolutely dwarfs anything that you'll ever see on console. So of course it makes sense that that side of Game Pass continues to grow exponentially while we're seeing the console side slow down. So as an example, I don't know, let's say there's 25 million Xbox Series X's and S's out there. What he's basically saying is that number is going to stay around that 15% of that 25 million. But when it gets to 50 million, it'll still be 15%. But now there's more people on the console that have actually subscribed to Game Pass. So if Game Pass is going to grow to some, you know, magical number, I don't know, 100 million subscribers overall, you're going to get more on the PC, the mobile side, than you're eventually going to have on the console side. Again, it's just math. There's just simply more people that play games on PC and mobile than play on console. So when they're talking about reaching, what do they say? They want to reach a billion people or something like that. It's going to be those mobile gamers and those PC gamers that are going to make up the majority of that number versus what we'll ever see on console.
Yeah, and then moved into the Blizzard Activision deal. Of course, we've been talking a bunch about that since they announced that purchase. So they're currently in the regulatory process, which we've talked about before, but they are expecting to close this fiscal year for their business, which ends in June. So something to keep an eye out there for that one. That will be very exciting. Phil is confident with the deal going through and shared more insight about Call of Duty exclusivity, stating they are not taking Call of Duty off the PlayStation platform, and this game deal will be similar with what they did with Minecraft. Of course, Call of Duty celebrating one of its largest releases ever with Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. Parrish, you and I, and Gary, but I turn to you, we've talked exclusivity, we've talked about putting down the big bucks and bringing games to your side, but there's also a little bit of gray in between that, because sometimes it's right for the business to keep that on all consoles. Do you agree with that, of not taking Call of Duty away?
Yeah, I think that's what you're seeing with Call of Duty. They're going to treat it like Minecraft. So, and obviously we saw the record numbers that Modern Warfare 2 has had this week in sales and engagement. Why would you risk that by making it exclusive? That makes no sense. What they'll probably do, are you assuming contracts aside, is the advantage to say, hey, come play it on Xbox, is it's on Game Pass, whatever DLC might be first, things like that. But the core Call of Duty experience, why would you take that away from PlayStation? I mean, we're talking 100 million plus people on PlayStation right now that potentially could be playing that game. And as the numbers are showing, are playing that game, at record numbers. So it's business. You'd be taking revenue away if you did.
Yeah, Gary, that feel about right to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. We should go back and pull some clips, because we've been all over the place on this as we've talked about this. I think all of us at some point have come at this from every angle. We've said, you don't spend X billion dollars, to not bring these games in house and make them exclusive. But we've also said, as Paris just did, you don't, spend that much money and you don't take a game like Call of Duty, which is as big as it is across that many platforms, and then just confine it to one platform. I think there's logic in both arguments. I think what ultimately wins out is, what they're deciding to do, which is, again, keep it. I think there would have been a lot of bad will engendered if they'd, and obviously Sony were really kicking and screaming about it. I think probably could have made a lot of trouble for them. I think Game Pass is still ultimately going to give them the edge. Phil, I know in the interview somehow they'll continue to support it on PlayStation. The Minecraft analogy is a good one. I think Call of Duty is one of those games that is too big and is historically too big across PlayStation it is almost unthinkable in retrospect to not be on PlayStation going forward. Now it's an Xbox exclusive title. Microsoft will continue to print money now, publish it on PlayStation. Just to be clear though, the analogy is fine. Call of Duty is not Minecraft. Minecraft is in a league of its own in terms of the scale and popularity. It's not even close. Like, it's up there in the upper echelons. Call of Duty is big. Minecraft is stratospherically big. And so I think it makes sense. It will be really, really interesting to see what the future of it looks like going forward. I think it's basically going to be a little bit of the flip the script of what it used to be, which is on every platform, but the PlayStation version is always considered the, like, the real master platform. It's the one that has the, you know, they used to do that thing where, you know, exclusive Spec Ops mode only available on PlayStation for the first year. They say the first year. That's actually the life. The 1 year is the life is the life cycle of a Call of Duty game, because there's a new one basically every year. Although they may not be going forward, right? Phil said maybe we'll make it like biannual or whatever. But I think what you're going to see now is, yeah, it continues to be on every platform, but Xbox is now the core platform for it. The Game Pass, the whatever bonuses, whatever DLC, like that's going to be the platform that gets, like, if you want the best Call of Duty experience, you'll still be able to get it on every platform, but Xbox is going to become the platform that is known for having the best Call of Duty experience.
Yeah, and then some other notables. Of course, I highly encourage you to check out this podcast, the Same Brain Podcast with Phil on this recent episode. But the other big notable, of course, restating that Xbox is in it for the long term, and they're thinking of new hardware, new games, and new ways to play. Always encouraging to hear that Microsoft and this team over at Xbox are in it for the long haul and want to continue to do this. And, of course, the final one. Phil and the team have heard loud and clear it's been too long since they have shipped a big first-party game. And that's what I want to talk about on today's Kinda Funny XCast. Our main topic of the show is, can Xbox bring the goods in 2023 after a rough start? I think we all can agree on the first 2 years of this console. First year, had a little bit of shining moments. Second year here, as we start to wrap up, not as many shining moments from the first-party titles here. So let's talk about what we can expect in 2023. And I want you two to tell me, do you think they got it for 2023 to turn this ship around?
God, I hope so, because I got to admit it, even as an Xbox cheerleader, even as someone who is an Xbox enthusiast, it is my preferred platform. You know, whenever Greggy asks, you know, do you want a game code? I always say Xbox is the one that if it's available on Xbox, that's the one that I want. I like the controller. I like the, I just like the UI. I like the experience. That's kind of my home platform. I still, again, I have a PlayStation 5 and a Switch and a PC. I play on everything. But if I'm given the choice, I'd always prefer that it be on Xbox first.
Yeah.
But even as someone who is fanboy, call it what you will, it's been, it has been a frustrating year. Like, we've wanted more titles to trumpet, and I think it is still an area where Sony, I think, has an edge. I could do a whole podcast talking about all the things I don't like about the PlayStation. I don't like the user experience. I don't like the controller very much. I think the PlayStation stuff is PlayStation Plus is nowhere near as good as Game Pass. But like the kind of games that I like, big, meaty, story-driven, single-player campaign type games, Uncharted, Last of Us, God of War, you name it. Sony does that better than Microsoft. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone could really, really argue that. And that's where they need to get better. I think by bringing in Bethesda, who are a leader in that space, you know, whether it be Fallout and now Elder Scrolls and now Skyrim and now Starfield, I think part of the reason why Bethesda was a very attractive purchase for Microsoft, because they immediately buy in a lot of that type of game and a lot of the expertise. But obviously the fruits of that, we had hoped to see that at the end of this year. Now Starfield's been pushed back. I think as we look at the end of this year, it's like, I think Xbox gamers have every right to say, where's our God of War Ragnarok this holiday? There isn't one. And it was going to be Starfield, and it got pushed. And again, better that they push it than release it early. But it has left, I think, Xbox gamers this year, this holiday season. Game Pass, you know, we just thought Game Pass is still amazing. But the big flagship AAA titles, Sony has one this holiday. Xbox doesn't, and I think Phil's doesn't take a genius to identify that is a problem that needs to be corrected going forward into 2023 and beyond.
Parrish, while we set up 2023 and what this means, do you agree with that for 2022? Is that where you stand as well, looking at this and the first party lineup that we had throughout this year?
Yeah, I mean it's pretty clear. You know, 2022, there's a big. I don't think they've ever had this in their history, in their, 21-year history now, where they've not shipped some type of big AAA experience, in the holiday season. So, well, maybe 2020 with the pandemic, but you get my point. It's a rarity that this happens. As we go into 2023, it's not, can they bring it? They have to. I mean, I think it's as simple as that. They have to. And they've given us the promise of the first half of what 2023 is going to look like. So when you take that combination of Starfield, Redfall, Forza Motorsport, Minecraft Legends, those games need to deliver. It can't be up, and obviously they're not rushing things out the door. That's why they delayed Starfield and Redfall, but they need to come in as quality, polished experiences that, you know, we're looking across different genres, of course, but these need to be good games. They need to be those big AAA quality experiences that we're expecting, because it has been a delay due to pandemic and other reasons, right? We haven't had all those big games these first couple years of the Series X life cycle. So 2023 has to be that for them. And I'm pretty sure they know that as well. So we look at the first half of the year and then obviously beyond into the second half of 2023. What is that going to look like? They got to start delivering those games. I will always go back to what Matt Booty, I believe he said that on Gamescast,
yes,
when he was on. They got to have a game a quarter. They got to get to that cadence to where they're delivering these games a quarter. Not only just, you know, obviously people talk about Game Pass and all that, but not everyone's going to use Game Pass. You have people that are going to invest in the Xbox ecosystem, and they want quality titles coming out of Xbox Game Studios. So now's the time. Forget Activision and all that. You have 23-something studios that are working on various things. They got to start delivering them. And yeah, 2023 has to be that year.
All right, let's talk about 2023. And can they deliver? Will they deliver? They got to deliver. Let's talk about first-party titles right now, right? Under the Microsoft and Bethesda umbrella, we're going to see a new turn of leaf. First time for Bethesda titles to be published first on Xbox.
Yeah, right, I was going to say, just I wanted to make the point, since you're talking about first-party titles first, I think those are really important. As much as we want to move past like the console wars mindset,
yep,
and as much as I think third-party games, you know, the Call of Duties and stuff of the world, continue to, you know, it's not like there's a shortage of great AAA games on the Xbox, mm-hmm, but most of them are coming from third parties and they're on the PlayStation as well. Sometimes you do want that bragging rights game. Yeah. Sometimes you do want that game that says, you know what, I get to play, I got God of War Ragnarok, what do you got? Or like, you know, or to say like, you know, last year I got Halo Infinite, what do you, or Forza Horizon, what do you got? Like there is still a little bit of that playground mentality, and that's where Microsoft is lagging right now on these first party titles. So let's get into it.
Let's talk about that right now. Of course, looking at it, Age of Empires 2 Definitive Edition and Age of Empires 4 will both come to console out of your first-party lineup right there. We talked about that last week. That is a true RTS. That's a big-time game, not a huge console game or market, more towards the PC side, but still, nonetheless, coming to console, exciting enough. Paris, when I say Age of Empires, does that excite the common fan,
do
you
think? That's the trebuchet.
You're asking if that, is that going to excite the common fan?
Yes. When we talk about titles, is this going to excite the common fan and their value?
I think the fact that you're getting it on console is going to be an exciting thing for people that have never experienced playing an Age game. Like now maybe they feel like I have an opportunity to experience what people have literally been playing for 25 years, right? Throughout, you know, with all the various sequels. So I think there's an opportunity there in January. It comes, right? Age of Empires 2.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's an opportunity there. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week. As long as they can get that controller experience to be usable, to be enjoyable, I think they'll be fine. And obviously, they're bringing mouse and keyboard support along with it as well. So as long as the controller experience overall is a good one on console, I think this is a great opportunity for them to expose, you know, the Age games, you know, to a new audience, because you're going to have a ton of people that are console only that have never played it. So, yeah, I do think this is something that they can have a notch in their belt, so to speak, to say that, yep, this is something that people are going to want to check out.
Okay, up next.
I just want to add, on that note, if we were hosting a PC gaming podcast in the 1990s, as I used to do, by the way, we would be talking about how that is one of the biggest titles of the year. But the problem is, as Paris says, 25 years later, time has moved on. Even on PC, RTS doesn't dominate the way it used to be. The days of StarCraft and Warcraft and Command & Conquer dominating, being some of the biggest, you know, heavy hitters in the PC gaming landscape, that's over. And on console, forget about it. Unless something changes, and it would have to be a big seismic shift, a real game-changing game, RTS is always going to be a niche on console. So I think that's not going to change the equation.
I'm very similar to you there, Gary. That's how I feel about this one. Up next, though, spring 2023, Forza Motorsport. Of course, this one's going back to the track. We've talked about this. This is turn 10. What kind of excitement can you expect out of this one, Gary?
Well, I'm gonna throw this back at you and ask you to educate me a little bit about Forza, because I'm not one of these gearhead tuner kind of guys that gets into, like, you know, changing every little spark plug in Gran Turismo or Forza Motorsport. But I prefer Forza Horizon things a bit more arcadey. Yeah, yeah. But Horizon, of course, is the offshoot. Now, I don't know, is Motorsport still considered the bigger game? Like, if we compare like Forza Horizon to the core Motorsport, Motorsport's still the bigger one, right?
Paris, is that right? You said yes. Do you believe that? You think that now?
I think it is. Okay. I think it is in this sense. And obviously Horizon has created its own huge following and audience. So this is not a slight, excuse me, to Horizon at all. But Forza Motorsport, this is the true racing sim experience. This is for the true racing enthusiast. That's a big audience in of itself. Whereas Horizon is more of an arcadey experience. You can get more casual people to come in. But for that true hardcore racing audience, yeah, it's still Forza Motorsport.
But that's why I have a hard time getting ahead of him. When you say the true enthusiast, that to me suggests a smaller group, right, of more hardcore people. Whereas Forza Horizon, which is more, you can more pick up and play, that suggests to me that it's accessible to a wider audience. Again, I would have to see the numbers. Mm-hmm. But again, I think Parrish is right. Just like with Gran Turismo on the PlayStation side, that's not, there's a lot of those enthusiasts, those gearheads, those people that do want to tune every spark plug, you know, or what have you. Like, that is a big audience. And when we talk about what's in the absolute top tier of Xbox first party titles, Forza is in that AAA tier. It's S tier. Yeah. There's nothing above it. It's on par with Halo, and I think the Halo, Gears, and Forza you'd consider like the three biggest titles, like first party titles that Microsoft owns. So when a new one, that is potentially one of the biggest. Again, it's hard for me again to like really relate to, because I'm not that guy that wants to spend hours tuning the engine. But for the people that do, and I think there are many of them, that's a huge release.
Yeah. You think of it this way with Forza. Forget the racing enthusiast crowd and all that. Forza has typically been, and I think now with Forza Motorsport being arguably one of their first Series X, S only games, next gen games, this is going to be a showcase game for them. As far as from a visual standpoint, fidelity standpoint, obviously 4K, the high frames, the whole thing. Forza games typically show very well. So for this to be the first next gen version of Forza, this is going to be something that they're really going to want to showcase and show off. So I do think
that's a really good point that Paris makes in terms of, you know, sort of about bragging rights games. These games that, like, if nothing else, show off what your console can do. Yeah, that's what the Forza games are really good at.
See, I'm interesting. I'm on the fence here because I am with you, Gary. I think Forza Horizon is for the casual audience, and I think that's a larger audience than the true diehard racing game fans, right? And I think the positive here is we're coming off an incredible Forza Horizon. Just hit him with the smoke for fun.
Just random
but we're coming hot off of Forza Horizon, which was a Game of the Year contender, stole the show in many aspects on the Xbox ecosystem side. I think people will see a new Forza title and be interested in trying that. How long they stick around, I don't think they'll stick around or see as large of a player base as Horizon did. I think Horizon
Horizon's more fun. It's more... Again, what you talk about, like, what's the most casual game? Like, when you talk about super casual, like Candy Crush and stuff like that, those games are massive.
Yeah.
And the more restrictive and the more inaccessible a game becomes, because it's aimed at people that really, really want to get super good in it and are willing to put in the hours. I get the people that like Forza Motorsport really, really like it. I just have a hard time believing that there's more of them than a game that offers a very similar experience. They drive around beautiful scenery and high-end luxury cars that you could never dream of owning in real life. But you can just pick up and play Horizon and have a good time with it. The whole game is about fun, the festival atmosphere. It's just, you know, it's a ride, it's an experience. Whereas Motorsport, again, the more kind of technical kind of, do I need to adjust the tire pressure? And the people that want to get into that, I think it really, really scratches that itch brilliantly. I just, I don't know, like, if that is... I think it's a bragging rights game. I think it's a Digital Foundry porn game, you know, where they go, oh, my God. You know what I mean? It's one of those games where the pixel counters are just, oh, my God, I can't believe they're pushing this to the next level. And all of that stuff is part of the narrative that helps the Xbox kind of stay where it needs to be and go to the next level. I just don't know if I never thought of, like, the core motorsport games as true mainstream titles, just because the nature of them, they're so tuned towards... The people that are going to get it, that are going to drive with a driving wheel.
Agreed,
and the pedals, and they've got a whole room in their house that, you know, their spouse hates because we could do so much with that room, and you had to put a fucking fake race car in there and your three monitors and the whole thing.
Yeah,
you know, like those people, and we know those people exist. That's who this game is for.
I'll take a moment before we leave Fortune just to speak to the casual audience, because I, last year, got to review Gran Turismo 7 here at Kinda Funny as a first-timer, right? Somebody jumping into that series as a first-timer. I've always seen myself as a casual racing fan. I like Need for Speed Underground, right? I like the more arcadey sims of Forza Horizon. So I'm going to try Forza Motorsport for the first time ever. I'm very excited to hit the track. I know what I'm getting into now off of Gran Turismo 7, right? But it is far different than what I liked in Horizon. God, but I mean, my mind shift, once you change that and you see what this team is going to do, I think people will find the fun of it. But, yeah, I don't know.
Going from, because I did the same thing. And again, my tastes are my tastes. I prefer the casual pick up and play arcade games. My favorite racing game of all time is Burnout. So that will tell you everything you need to know. But like I did the same thing. I played coming from Forza Horizon, and someone got me a code for Gran Turismo 7, and I came from that to Gran Turismo. That's like going from a rave to a funeral. Like, it's just so slow and boring.
Yeah.
And you've got to do a million things before it'll even let you do anything remotely approaching fun. Whereas over there, everyone's like getting high and fucking in the bushes, and it's a festival.
They're doing that in Horizon.
Glow sticks, and some of this might be my own headcanon, but you know what I mean? Like, that's the vibe
that
Forza is giving you. Like, it's just super fun. And like, hey, we're the wacky morning zoo DJs here at Horizon Radio. And it's like, yeah, this is a vibe. And you go over to Gran Turismo and it's just like boring classical music, and what the fuck? You just want to die.
Yeah, I feel the Forza Motorsport definitely gives me the vibe of like, do you have Grey Poupon? Like that commercial classical music kind of stuff.
Right, you know, exactly. And you know, you love it. Don't tell me the people at that Horizon Festival aren't fucking. Oh, I guarantee you they are.
I agree with you, Gary. I like that vibe. Parasol, you have the hot take for us. Give it to us.
Before I give the hot take, hearing Gary do like an American accent radio just completely threw me for a loop. I was like, who's even talking right now? But hot take, and because it's funny, you said you played Gran Turismo 7. I played it as well. I come from Gran Turismo 2, 3 A-Spec. That was like the height for me as far as me being really into the race sim stuff. GT Planet, you know, with the original Forza, all that stuff came out. I was really into the stuff back then. I think Forza Motorsport, I think Turn 10 and what they've been able to do with Forza over the past few years, I think Forza has surpassed Gran Turismo as the definitive racing sim in gaming right now. Okay. And I know I probably made a bunch of people at GT Planet really mad by saying that, but that's just what I think. And I think they have a great opportunity here with Motorsport to prove me correct, or they might prove me wrong. Because, you know, just full admission, I thought GT7 was okay.
Yeah.
But I think Polyphony has done a lot better in the past with the Gran Turismo games.
From what I remember, Paris, they pissed off a lot of their core fan base with the progression and the microtransactions and stuff on GT7.
Yeah. I wasn't even going to bring that up, but you're right. That made a lot of people upset. But I do think, and actually, and I know we want to move on here. I'll keep it really quick. Back in 2020, when the Series X first came out on Gamertag Radio, had like Aaron Greenberg and someone else was on. I'm blanking on the name, but we even talked about Forza Motorsport at that time, and he was mentioning that they're looking to make Forza Motorsport like a platform. So they're going to instead of a Forza Motorsport 2 coming out in 2 or 3 years, right? No, it's going to be this game, but they're going to continue to build upon it, like new tracks, cars, obviously. So this becomes like the definitive version of Forza Motorsport for the Series X. So I'm excited for it. I think, you know, to kind of wrap this up, I think this has an opportunity to absolutely be a showcase game for them. So really looking forward to it. Hopefully we get a release date soon.
What else? Go to the next big three that I have, of course, Redfall and Starfield. We've talked about both of these. These will be the first Bethesda titles coming straight to Xbox. As we know, we've seen, of course, Deathloop and Ghostwire Tokyo. Those were timed exclusives on PlayStation. So this will be the first time a true Bethesda game is coming out for the Xbox ecosystem right here. Redfall and Starfield. We've talked about it before, guys. I mean, Paris, these two are going to be the showstoppers of the year along with Forza, correct? You think these will be the big ones?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, Starfield is going to be the one that everyone's been talking about, really anticipating that they really need to nail. I think Redfall has an opportunity to do so. I think that last trailer they showed really showed off well to me.
Yep.
I still go back to the one thing, and I know we talked about it before, Mike. It's the co-op progression.
Yeah.
How is that going to work? Is it going to make sense in practice when we're actually playing, so it doesn't feel like a frustrating thing where we're constantly lagging back. I'm not getting the progress that I need because I played with this buddy for 3 or 4 hours. Now I got to start all over and do it again. I hope as we get closer to launch with that, we get a little more clarification on it so people understand how it works. But that would probably be my only pause with Redfall right now, because I mean, look, the DNA coming from the Dishonored team, you know, obviously Arcane, just everything that we've seen so far, I'm excited for it. I just hope that co-op progression thing doesn't turn out to be the thing.
I had a personal crisis on the first XCast in studio a few weeks ago about Gotham Knights, right? The one thing I would say, I felt like they dealt with that pretty well, whereas like if you're in a person's like a friend's campaign and you do a thing and then you go back to your own and you hit the story mission or whatever that you did in a friend's, they'll tell you like, hey, you already did this, you want to like do it again or skip it and stuff like that. And I think something similar along the lines for Redfall I think would go a long way, but again, who knows.
Yeah, that's the conversation we had when they first talked about how the share world would be and co-op experience. I hope they take the feedback to heart, is right, Paris, and I hope that we do see a small course correction in that, because there is nothing more frustrating than playing these co-op games and having to redo the content on your own world or losing all the progress that you did with somebody else. That is always tough and not fun, so be interesting to see. But yeah, Redfall and Starfield, the two big ones, and then rounding it out, Minecraft Legends. Gary Whitter, what do you think about Minecraft Legends?
Well, so let me touch on Redfall and Starfield real quick first. Both of those games, to different degrees, still have to convince me a little bit. To different degrees. Redfall, I think, has a little bit more work to do in this. It looks like a lot of fun. Develop has a great pedigree. I still haven't seen anything to really illustrate to me what it is about that game that's going to distinguish itself from Back 4 Blood, Left 4 Dead, all the other kind of co-op, you know, shoot a bunch of zombies in the face type games. I think they are doing something a little bit different, but I'm not entirely clear on what it is yet. And I feel like we've had a bunch of those games lately. I don't know what it is about this one that's really going to like take it to the next level. But I'm optimistic, and just based on the developer, because they've done tremendous work in the past. Starfield, I mean, look, on paper, it looks like the biggest thing, right? It looks like this looks like the game that's going to solve. Like, even if Microsoft didn't put anything else out in 2023, like, Starfield's just going to do it. Like, if any one game's going to do it, this is the great white hope. And I kind of feel like it's all there on paper. If you said to me, oh, yeah, so Elder Scrolls, Fallout, and now, of course, whatever that is going to be incredible, right? And maybe it will be. I just keep coming back to that first trailer. I was so underwhelmed by it, because I was really looking for like the next, I don't know. I really wanted to be blown away, but I was leaning in, and I just kind of felt like I just feel my enthusiasm kind of draining away through that trailer. They might be only like one more, slightly more detailed trailer away from like getting me back on board. And it's not that I'm off board. Like, I'm going to play it day one. I'm super excited for it. I'm just on the pedigree alone, you've got to believe that it's going to hit the mark, that it is going to be everything that it promises. I wish like the actual assets, the actual things that I'd seen were as convincing as the pedigree and the history makes you want to believe it's going to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I feel that, Gary. That I feel that for sure. Yeah, it's going to be very interesting with that one. There's going to be a lot of weight to Starfield. I think we all know
the expectation
that
on that one's crushing.
Oh, yeah. But I do want to round out with Minecraft Legends. Yes.
I should have brought my kid on. She's the Minecraft expert. she loves Minecraft. We played a ton of Minecraft dungeons. I showed her this. And, you know, she's usually very she's like me. Like, it takes a very specific kind of thing to, like, get her excited about something. Otherwise, she's just kind of meh. But, like, she saw this. She's like, oh, yeah, I'll play that. That looks good. She really liked the look of it. And it looks fun. It looks colorful. I think, you know, obviously it's got the biggest game, world, universe, IP, franchise, whatever you call it, in the world behind it. Minecraft continues to be just all-conqueringly massive. Even though it's not like the coolest game on the block, a lot of people don't take it seriously or whatever, but trust me, it's still huge. And I think what they did with Minecraft Dungeons was, as I've said before, I think that was genius. Like, let's make a Diablo style dungeon crawler, set it in the Minecraft universe. They were two ideas that went together so well. Minecraft Dungeons is so much fun. I feel like this is the next piece of that puzzle. Like, how could I think this is the continuing to answer this question of how can we take Minecraft and bring it into different genres and introduce kids that you know, for whom many kids, Minecraft was their first real exposure to video games. How can that then become like the gateway drug into all kinds of different genres? This feels like the next chapter in that story after Dungeons, and I'm very optimistic about it being a big success.
Parrish, you feel the same way? I know you were big on Dungeons. I mean, seeing Minecraft, like Gary has brought up, you're excited about that.
Yeah, because when I saw that in the showcase, my immediate thought was this is going to be the sleeper hit of that first half of 2023 that, you know, people may not have necessarily have on their radar for basically what Gary is saying. I mean, this is something that I play with my kids as far as Minecraft Dungeon goes. So this is just going to be a natural extension of that. That's going to get us, you know, playing more things together again. And again, it's the same team. So I'm loving what they did with Dungeons. So I have that expectations going into Legends, even though, you know, it's a slightly different genre that Legends is going to be, but it's that Minecraft style that I think translates so well. And with the cooperative play, yeah, really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a blast.
Yeah, so those are the ones that I have written down on my sheet that we've been tracking that will, you know, quote unquote, be released in the first half of 2023, right, Paris? Well, we talked about it after that Summer Games Showcase. Here is the remainder of 2022 into 2023. Here's what you can expect. Those are the first party titles that I wrote down from the team, right? You have the big four, and then, of course, Age of Empires 2 and 4 coming to console, making six right there. Of course, let's say this is just 2023. We're not talking about third-party games, and people are going to come in, of course, talking about Game Pass and getting those awesome third-party deals. But looking at your first-party slate right there, Gary Whitta, is that the goods that you expect from Xbox for 2023, if it's the whole year? Maybe it is the first half of the year.
I mean, I was just joking about how like Starfield could be the only game they would put out, and if it lands as big as you'd expect it to, that would be enough. And yeah, of course, we know that's not true. That still feels thin for a whole year's worth of releases. Again, we haven't gone too far into the back end of the year. Microsoft may well have things that either we don't know about at all, or that we don't realize are as close, you know, like it happens all the time. Oh, Somerville's, I didn't realize that was coming out this year, whatever. Like, they come quicker than Fable, I think, is too much to hope for. I think that's still too far out. That's that weird, rare thing that no one quite knows what it is. It's probably still too far out. But I think, again, if Phil has been saying, as we just talked about, yeah, we know that we need to, like, you know, come correct with these with the big first party titles. Starfield obviously was meant to be a big holiday release this year. Now it's going to go into the early part of next year. But there's still the expectation that once you get into September, October, November, all the big companies, Sony, Nintendo, Microsoft, are all gonna come with their big kind of holiday, you know, gift, like the gift game that everybody wants. They missed it this year. They don't have it. I don't know. Even if Starfield is the biggest thing ever when it comes out in the early part of next year, there's still going to be an expectation that they have something big in that holiday season window. And maybe Phil's got a joker up his sleeve that we don't know about yet. I would hope so. Because my answer to your question, the short answer is, are the games that we just talked about enough to be Microsoft's like first party slate for the whole of 2023? No.
Okay. Personally, I mean, of course, this is announced for the first half. We could see things slip, you know, but are you pleased with what we're looking at for 2023 right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, excuse me, it's solid because obviously two of these games were supposed to come out this year, Starfield being the big one. So they've slipped into that first half of 2023. So that just enhances what we're going to get in the first half of 2023 even more, knock on wood, assuming they don't get delayed again. But what is the second half going to look like? Are they going to be able to keep that momentum going in the second half of 2023 so that we're not having a conversation a year from now going, Man, what's the big holiday title for Xbox? I hope instead we're having this conversation like, man, it's just too much to play. There's just too many things. You know, that's the kind of conversations that I want to have moving beyond the first half of 2023. But I think what they have, I mean, again, just sticking to Xbox Game Studios, Forza, Minecraft, Starfield, Redfall. I mean, no complaints there at all. I think that's very solid.
I agree with you, Paris and Gary, right there. When I look at this, I see a diverse lineup that I'm excited for, right? You have the RTS genre right there, kind of a smaller market, but it is awesome to see a franchise like Age of Empires come to console. You tick off the box of racing, right? You have that fun Forza title right there that won't speak to everybody, but I think the whole Xbox community as a whole will try it, jump into it, learn maybe they're not the gearheads, and they'll quickly get out of it, but it's there, right? It's knocking off the box. Redfall. Everybody's up on the co-op multiplayer experience right now. Everybody wants a piece of that action. Everybody wants to bring people together. I think that's very exciting, especially coming from Arkane. Starfield and Bethesda, I mean, Todd Howard, can't wait to see what this team delivers. I think that's another box checked. And then Minecraft, right? I think you're knocking off a lot of big boxes here. But my concern is this truly going to be the first half of 2023? And back of my mind, I'm worried that this is all of 2023.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, most of these games right now are kind of, and again, these days, right, games are still slipping all the time, right? We're not out of that, of those woods yet, games slipping. So some of these things may slip more into the holiday window. But again, there's only so many pieces to move around. Yes, Minecraft, huge. Forza, huge. Starfield, potentially huge. Redfall, I think, could be very big as well. It still feels like there's at least like one piece missing. Like, I feel like I'm still going, yeah, and. Like, where's the one more thing? I feel like there's got to be, I don't know, Starfield we've known about forever. Maybe it's just because, you know, Starfield's been publicly in development forever. Forza, to me, the excitement for that is diminished a little bit just because we're coming off the back of another Forza. Like, people are still playing Forza Horizon all the time. Another Forza game that's a slightly different type of Forza game doesn't feel like a totally new, fresh thing. Although, again, the gearheads and the tuners are going to, who have been waiting for this, I'm going to love it, so maybe I shouldn't try to speak to that too much. I've got this gut instinct, this feeling that there's a piece missing, that there's one more piece, that there is a one more thing, that there's a wild card, there's something that we don't know about yet or don't realize is ready for 2023 or will be. Again, like, it's not Fable, but, you know, like, there's one extra big piece that I feel like they need and is missing. It's just this kind of gut sense that I have.
All right. Well, that is the question right now I pose to all of you. Does Xbox have it for 2023? Let us know. Of course, thank you all so much for watching and tuning in. We're getting set to record your Patreon exclusive Remember Blank show right now. You can catch that over on patreon.com/kindoffunny and patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. For all you Patreon supporters out there, you get to enjoy Gary Whitta telling me and Paris all about Chrome Hound. So let's kick it over to that. For everyone watching and listening, thank you for another awesome week of the XCast. We'll catch you back here next week for Halo, the Winter Update. Peace, everybody.